Henry's job was to make sure nothing like that ever happened to Eddie. That was his job, and he did it, but it wasn't easy. Henry and Mrs. Dean agreed on that, if nothing else. Both of them frequently reminded Eddie of just how much Henry had sacrificed to keep Eddie safe from drunk drivers and muggers and junkies and possibly even malevolent aliens who might be cruising around in the general vicinity of the upper deck, aliens who might decide to come down from their UFOs on nuclear-powered jet skis at any time in order to kidnap little kids like Eddie Dean. So it was wrong to make Henry more nervous than this terrible responsibility had already made him. If Eddie was doing something that did make Henry more nervous, Eddie ought to cease doing that thing immediately. It was a way of paying Henry back for all the time Henry had spent watching out for Eddie. When you thought about it that way, you saw that doing things better than Henry could do them was very unfair. Then there was the underneath reason. That reason, the world beneath the world, one might say, was more powerful because it could never be stated. Eddie could not allow himself to be better than Henry at much of anything, because Henry was, for the most part, good for nothing. Except watching out for Eddie, of course. Henry taught Eddie how to play basketball in the playground near the apartment building where they lived. This was in a cement suburb where the towers of Manhattan stood against the horizon like a dream, and the welfare check was king. Eddie was 8 years younger than Henry and much smaller, but he was also much faster. He had a natural feel for the game. Once he got on the cracked, hilly cement of the court with the ball in his hands, the moves seemed to sizzle in his nerve endings. He was faster, but that was no big deal. The big deal was this. He was better than Henry. If he hadn't known it from the results of the pickup games in which they sometimes played, he would have known it from Henry's thunderous looks and the hard punches to the upper arm Henry often dealt out on their way home afterwards. These punches were supposedly Henry's little jokes. "Two for flinching," Henry would cry cheerily, and then whap, whap into Eddie's bicep with one knuckle extended. But they didn't feel like jokes. They felt like warnings. They felt like Henry's way of saying, "You better not fake me out and make me look stupid when you drive for the basket, bro. You better remember that I'm watching out for you." The same was true with reading, baseball, ring allevio, math, even jump rope, which was a girl's game. That he was better at these things, or could be better, was a secret that had to be kept at all costs. Because Eddie was the younger brother, because Henry was watching out for him. But the most important part of the underneath reason was also the simplest. These things had to be kept secret because Henry was Eddie's big brother, and Eddie adored him. 4. 2 days ago, while Susanna was skinning out a rabbit and Roland was starting supper, Eddie had been in the forest just south of camp. He had seen a funny spur of wood jutting out of a fresh stump. A weird feeling, he supposed it was the one people called déjà vu, swept over him, and he found himself staring fixedly at the spur, which looked like a badly shaped doorknob. He was distantly aware that his mouth had gone dry. After several seconds, he realized he was looking at the spur sticking out of the stump, but thinking about the courtyard behind the building where he and Henry had lived, thinking about the feel of the warm cement under his ass and the whopping smells of garbage from the dumpster around the corner in the alley. In this memory, he had a chunk of wood in his left hand and a paring knife from the drawer by the sink in his right. The chunk of wood jutting from the stump had called up the memory of that brief period when he had fallen violently in love with wood carving. It was just that the memory was buried so deep he hadn't realized at first what it was. What he had loved most about carving was the seeing part, which happened even before you began. Sometimes you saw a car or a truck, sometimes a dog or cat. Once, he remembered, it had been the face of an idol. One of the spooky Easter Island monoliths he had seen in an issue of National Geographic at school. That had turned out to be a good one. The game was to find out how much of that thing you could get out of the wood without breaking it. You could never get it all, but if you were very careful, you could sometimes get quite a lot. There was something inside the boss on the side of the stump. He thought he might be able to release quite a lot of it with Roland's knife. It was the sharpest, handiest tool he had ever used. Something inside the wood, waiting patiently for someone like him, to come along and let it out, to set it free. Oh, look at the sissy. What you making today, sissy? A dollhouse? A piss spot for your itty-bitty teeny peeny? A slingshot so you can pretend to hunt rabbits just like the big boys? Oh, ain't that cute? He felt a burst of shame, a sense of wrongness, that strong sense of secrets that must be kept at any cost. And then he remembered, again, that Henry Dean, who had in his later years become the great sage and eminent junkie, was dead. This realization had still not lost its power to surprise. It kept hitting him in different ways, sometimes with sorrow, sometimes with guilt, sometimes with anger. On this day, 2 days before the great bear came charging out of the green corridors of the woods, it had hit him in the most surprising way of all. He had felt relief and a soaring joy. He was free.